This is Pillow Talk, brought to you by Killer and a Sweet Thing. I'm Eileen Kelly.
And I'm Jacob Safarian. On this podcast, we normalize sexual experiences by allowing the people who live them to speak for themselves.
On today's episode, we're joined by activist Emily DePass. Emily was only 22 years old when she was diagnosed with genital herpes. She's currently studying human sexuality with plans to become a therapist. Emily also has a blog and writes for other outlets to dismantle STI stigma. Emily DePass, welcome to Pillow Talk.
Thank you for having me, Eileen.
So I guess to start off, for our listeners, would you mind defining what herpes is?
So herpes is a skin-to-skin infection. It's a sexually transmitted infection. And my favorite thing in talking about herpes biologically is that it is in the same family as chickenpox and shingles, which a lot of people don't know.
Wow, I didn't know that.
So fun fact.
If you don't mind telling us what strain you have and then the difference between the two for our listeners who aren't familiar with it.
So I have herpes simplex virus HSV-2, and that's usually strictly genital herpes. There are some rare cases when people have HSV-2 orally. The other strain is HSV-1, which is more recognized as oral herpes, more like cold sores. But recently, it has been making the rounds as genital HSV-1 because partners are going down on one another with cold sores.
Oh, wow. So you can get the cold sores that we would think about on your mouth on your genitals.
Mm-hmm. Good to know.
Same presentation, just a different space.
Do you remember the first time you heard about herpes, maybe in a health class, and what was the connotation that went along with it?
So I don't know the first time I heard of it, but I always had a general idea that it was bad. I was also a Catholic schoolgirl, so we know how that went.
Yes.
So there was a lack of education there, so I probably didn't get a real contextual human sexuality education until I took a course in my undergraduate. And that, I mean, we had the pictures. It wasn't necessarily a scare tactic, but it was definitely a worst case scenario kind of picture. I mean, you see jokes on television shows, you know, in Mean Girls, I always think of Coach Carr in the health class.
And, you will get this and you'll die.
Yes. Yeah. So that was my understanding of what STIs and herpes were about.
When did you first discover that you had herpes?
So it was July 14th, 2015.
Oh, wow. So you know like exact date.
So that date sticks out. I contracted it from someone whom I knew and I trusted. It was a partner that I had been with in the past, and he was in the Air Force, and he had just returned to the area. And within 2 weeks, I felt something just wasn't right. I had a lot of pain, a lot of itchiness, a lot of just kind of innate sense of knowing that something was wrong.
Something was up.
And so I made a doctor appointment. I called my parents and I'm like, you know, something isn't right. And I'm like, I think it might be herpes.
So you knew right away that you thought it was herpes. You didn't think it was anything else.
No, I mean, I'm sure there was a possibility, but I guess that's where my mind jumped. And perhaps that's a really good portrayal of what internalized stigma looks like.
Mm. Yeah. And did you have sores?
I did. So I didn't see them. I was actually too afraid to look at my body, too embarrassed to look at my body. But when I went into the clinic, the doctor said, you know, this looks like herpes. And although it looks like herpes, you can't diagnose just visually. Mm-hmm. So you have to do a viral culture or a blood test or a combination.
Yeah. Can you walk us through that process of when you finally went to the doctor?
So I went and I actually took my dad. I am an only child and I'm very close with my parents.
Was that difficult?
No, not really. You know, I never really had a formal sex ed or birds and bees talk from my parents, but I've always just been very open with them. We talk every day.
That's amazing.
Just like, Dad, you know, I need you. He's my rock.
Yeah.
So he went, and when I was being examined, he was like in the waiting room. The doctor says, we're going to do a viral culture. And that is one of the reliable forms if you.
And so that's where they swab the actual.
Yeah.
The lesion.
Okay. And that's something you have to test when there are lesions present. You can't test asymptomatically. So the lesion turned up positive, but my blood test turned up negative. So what that means is it signaled a recent infection. So the blood test, it tests for antibodies, which usually take 3 months to develop. So the recommendation is after you get diagnosed by viral culture, you go back in 3 months to check to see if you've developed antibodies.
If it's in the bloodstream.
And that's how I learned 3 months later that I had.
Do they start you on a medication?
They did.
Okay.
I was prescribed antivirals. There are three types. I am on Valtrex, Valciclovir, I believe is the formal name.
Mm-hmm.
Big blue pill.
And do those have any side effects or?
Not that I know of. You know, everyone's body chemistry is different, so I can't speak to that. But for me, it's just another pill.
So does it just keep outbreaks from happening or keep
It's a suppressive therapy. So my partner and I, he is discordant. We're a discordant couple, meaning that I am HSV positive and he is HSV negative.
Got it.
So the ultimate protection from keeping him from getting herpes is condoms and suppressive therapy and not having sex during outbreaks.
And so in this 3-month period, as you were like getting your final diagnosis, did you contact the person you believed to?
I still stayed with him and we had consistent sex about once per week. And when I told him, I said, hey, you know, I have something to tell you after I had been tested and found all this information out. And he's like, oh, you know, I have this motorcycle test I have to study for. And I'm like, you know, it's really important. Can I come to you? Can I call you? And he's like, no, I have to study. He's like, are you pregnant? And I'm like, no, I have herpes. And it's just like, oh, are you okay?
Wow. Was he aware that he was carrying herpes?
I don't think so. I can't know for sure. And that's something that really bothered me for a really long time.
Did he go and get tested after you told him?
I have no idea. My assumption is no.
Oh, wow.
And were you in a monogamous relationship, if you don't mind me asking?
For myself, I was. For him, I'm not sure. He says that he was.
And so you don't know if he ever went and got tested?
No. My assumption is no, just based on his character.
And at this point in your life, you know, being an educator and knowing about this and an activist, does that bother you knowing that he could be spreading it?
It does. Yeah, I actually was a member of a wedding party in which he was a part of in the last month.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Is that the first time you'd seen him in a while?
Yeah. Definitely a couple years because we live in different spaces. And it was something I was nervous about from a year ago when my friend asked me to be in the wedding. But he reached out to me on Instagram, direct messaged me and was like, hey, you know, I just want to talk about being there. I'm like, you know, I'm fine. Like, I can be cordial. I'm not here to shame anyone or call anyone out. But it was still something I struggled with to be present with that.
And so was this struggle born from a kind of resentment?
I wouldn't say resentment. I guess it's just everything that we went through. He broke up with me on a Snapchat.
Oh, wow.
Stop it.
A Snapchat text.
Stop. That could be a whole nother podcast.
That's a whole nother podcast, but it was just the beginning from the beginning of the relationship to the end of the relationship. It just, this is the type of person he is. I don't think he's a bad person. I think he's a misguided person.
That's very big of you.
Yeah, very big of you. I know we're over here like boiling.
Like, yes. I know
what we talk about in the office all day. No, no, no.
So that's that. But when he broke up with me, I wore black lipstick for a week. It was a week before Christmas.
I love it.
You know, I'm going to mourn for a little bit. And I think it was December 27th. I was like, you know what? I'm just going to own this. And I talked about it on Facebook. I said, you know, I had this little blog and I talked, you know, around it. You know, I said something big had happened to me, but I didn't label it. And on Facebook, I actually labeled it and said, you know what? This is what happened to me. And this has been affecting me. And I know it's affected my friendships and relationships with other people.
Wow. How was it affecting your friendships?
I just wasn't myself. I recently wrote about how I drank too much. I relied on alcohol. I didn't seek outside help. You know, I told some of my friends, my friend group knew, but my coping mechanisms weren't the healthiest.
And do you feel like you turned to alcohol because you felt judged in your relationships?
I think I participated in alcohol as an escape.
Yeah.
I think it was more of an escape. It was there, you know, it was a small town in Maryland and there wasn't really much else to do. You know, I stopped going to this internship that I had that I loved, stopped loving myself for a very long time.
So how long did this period after your initial diagnosis last?
About 6 months.
6 months. 6 months. Wow.
And for some people that lasts longer.
Yeah. So what was the turning point for you?
The breakup.
The breakup.
I remember.
So you stayed with him after the fact. Was the herpes the primary contributor to y'all's breakup or?
I don't think there was a connection there. It was a relationship that I fantasized about. I had met him abroad when he was in the Air Force and he was stationed in London. And there was a connection there, but it didn't transcend the ocean. And he came back and...
I mean, the Snapchat comment is really...
It's really a tell-all.
Emotional immaturity to me.
Yeah, indicative
I'm
of it.
Very sorry you had to go
through
that.
Especially when you're 27 years old, but who's, you know...
Who's keeping count?
Who's keeping count of that?
And so can you actually walk us through more a bit of like how you felt about your body post your diagnosis?
So I remember not wanting anything to do with my body. Like I shared with you, I didn't look at my outbreak. I didn't want to see what it looked like. I remember, you know, in the first couple of days after I was diagnosed, I'd take baths. And I remember how painful it was getting in the bathtub. And I love baths.
Were the lesions internal?
They were internal.
Inside your vagina?
Yeah.
So they were never out?
They were never out. So I would have to open my labia and see.
Got it. up until this point, have you done so if you've had another outbreak?
I actually haven't, to my knowledge, had a visible outbreak. Okay. So it was only the primary one.
That's common, mm-hmm. correct?
It
that
is.
Most people have the worst outbreak as the first one.
Yep,
and then
the primary. Okay. They typically lessen over time is the typical pattern. And most people that have herpes are asymptomatic.
See, that's not the connotation you get.
No.
Because when you grow up in school, it's really just like herpes is forever. And you just...
What did we read today? We were looking up like slang terms for STIs. And they were saying that herpes was the gift that keeps on giving. And we were like, that is just so offensive.
It's bad.
And also wrong.
Completely.
So just so much
misinformed.
Misinformation out there and stigma, which comes from the misinformation. So we're really glad to have you here to just be able to tell your story and kind of lay it down flat. And, you know, this is me. I have herpes and I have a successful sex life.
And so did you engage in any sort of sexual activity in that 6 month period after your diagnosis?
It was just with that guy. Mm-hmm. Part of that, I think, was just out of fear of rejection. Part of that, I think it was comfort. Like, okay, this person, you know, has been with my body before. You know, this person knows I have this. Part of it was just routine. Part of it was putting myself too much into a relationship that wasn't really there.
Mm-hmm.
That was a hard lesson to learn.
Mm-hmm.
I refer to it as somewhat of an identity crisis. I donned black lipstick after he broke up with me, but like the 6 months prior, I'd wear all these crazy lip colors and put clip-in color hairs in my hair. For me, like, it's not super wild, but it was just trying to find a new identity. And I really struggled to look at myself, not just my body, but myself in the mirror. You know, I didn't feel like masturbating. I didn't, like, I have this whole little thing of sex toys and I didn't want to touch it, didn't want to go near it.
Did you feel dirty? Like,
I did. I felt dirty. I felt all the words that they shout at you or that you see on TV. Dirty, diseased, whore, slut, skank. You know, I had one nurse when I was trying to get a prescription filled. She's like, well, you should have worn a condom.
Stop.
A medical professional said that to you?
So you can get herpes if you wear a condom too, because it's skin to skin contact and it doesn't protect everything mm-hmm. if you're with a male bodied person. And there was one time, you know, I went to get my Valtrex at Target and I got like a glare, like a look. And I'm like, you know, you don't know where it is. You don't know what I'm taking this for. Like, what do you know?
Did you experience any of these sort of looks?
It makes me so mad.
It makes me mad because it's the medical profession too. And I think there's a large lack of human sexuality education there as well. I think
100% they get only like... Eight hours mm-hmm. in all of medical school, which is years of training.
Yeah.
It's just so backwards. I was actually talking about this like yesterday. The first question when you see an OBGYN is how many partners have mm-hmm. you had? Which I think is so outdated because I could be having monogamous sex with someone and contract an STI versus have 50 partners and be using condoms or just not come across it. For me, it has less connotation these days.
For sure. And you see that kind of attitude proliferate when you, the first question, you know, ever getting an STI and sharing it, at least in my experience, sharing an STI with a friend is, who do you think gave it to you?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, why does it really matter? You know, they probably didn't knowingly pass it along. Obviously, you should tell people if you have an STI after the fact so they can get tested and proceed properly.
Mm-hmm.
But there's such this thing of like this dirtiness attached mm-hmm. to it and stigma, as you say.
I mean, what I always say is like it's bacteria at the end of the day. And it doesn't matter if you're beautiful, if you're intelligent, if you're wealthy, if you're famous.
It's mucosal membranes. Yeah. It likes that stuff.
It
does.
It's true.
That's what it does.
It can affect anyone. And I think that's really important for people to know.
Absolutely. And did you experience any of this judgment within your own family?
Not to my knowledge. You know, it definitely could have been going on. I have really supportive parents and I was very thankful for that and that they were there and open to listening and accepting me. I remember when I told one of my best friends, we were eating Chipotle on my back couch at the time and we had margaritas. And I said, you know, I have herpes. And she just said, oh my gosh, like, are you okay? It was relieving for me because, you know, there was no judgment. It was, how can I help you through this?
Mm-hmm.
But one friend in another conversation in a different friend group, after I had talked about having herpes for a while, she goes, you know, I had such a stigma and stereotype about these people. She goes, then you told me you had herpes and it all changed.
Mm-hmm.
So that
was moving the needle.
Mm-hmm.
One person at a time. I mean, talking about your friends and how they reacted, do you have any advice on how people can be a supportive friend or supportive lover or family member if someone they know gets diagnosed?
If someone discloses to you that they're diagnosed, offer them the space to talk about it. I think that's first and foremost, to let them know that you are a safe space. You know, say, hey, I'm here to support you. Tell me what I need to know, kind of thing, and then go from there. I'd look up educational resources. Some websites are better than others. Even some government websites. It's unfortunate that the LGBTQ population, there's not as much research on STIs, especially with transgender individuals.
When did you feel comfortable enough to begin having sex again after your breakup with this colorful character?
Can we call him an asshole?
Yeah, you can.
Okay, with this asshole.
We're going on the
Snapchat
record.
Asshole.
He's an asshole.
Bye.
I love it because I'm not saying it.
That's true.
You can let me say it.
Yeah, I'll let you do it.
So when was the first time you felt comfortable again after you all broke up?
Mid-March.
What did it take to get there?
This is always a bit strange because I have people reach out to me and they're like, how do I tell my partner? And I can offer advice. But for me, it was very strange because I was very open about it on all of my social media channels. Mm-hmm. So most people...
So right off the bat.
Yeah, it's like, this is me. This is who I am.
Wow, that's really brave and honestly rare.
You know, it's funny. I was actually thinking about this act of bravery. You know, people always say it's brave. And I'm not sure if you've heard of Ella Dawson, but she was a former herpes writer. She has a great TED talk that I highly recommend. But in her TED talk, she said, you know, I'm not brave for talking about herpes. It should be something that's rather normal. Mm-hmm. And at first that struck me as a bit odd, but now I'm starting to see it's more of an act of resilience and bouncing back than bravery, because herpes, most people have one form or the other. I think it's roughly 90% of the world population has HSV1 or HSV2.
Yeah, that's the statistic we publish on the site as well.
Yeah.
We've came across in our research.
You know, so it is relatively normal. It's like a common cold. So is it brave to talk about it? I don't know. But resilient, I think it is, because it's a bouncing back to your character and it shapes you.
Absolutely. Have you ever been shamed by anyone for it?
So I was shamed in 2016 on Twitter. There was some conservative that actually wrote an article about me. It was very, very surreal. No, I'm not kidding. I'll show you. But like, went as far as looking at my LinkedIn, where I went to high school, my high school tuition, my college tuition, like all kinds of these things to... Yeah.
People are so bored.
That's terrible.
And crazy.
Aren't there like slander and libel laws for this?
There have to be somewhere.
I'm not a lawyer, but how did that make you feel when you saw this?
I felt personally attacked.
Yeah.
I was actually afraid. I'm like, you know, is this person going to hurt me? I mean, it's internet.
Did they know you? Did you ever find out who was behind the account?
I know who was behind the account. It was some conservative in some southern state somewhere. So just someone that didn't have time.
Yeah. Who had no relationship to you personally.
No, not at all. Just found me on Twitter.
And they were just upset that you were talking about your own diagnosis. Mm-hmm. That is just people.
Yeah. People.
Flash forward to your dating life today. How has herpes affected that, if at all?
So my partner and I are actually living together and we're monogamous. But when we were first dating, he's like, well, you know more about this than me. So, you know, you have to tell me what I have to do to protect myself.
Were you nervous about initially telling him?
Yeah. Or maybe even your partners after the...
Sure.
The asshole, Snapchat asshole. Like, how did you go about telling them? You seem like you're really upfront right away.
I remember, like I told you, it was mid-March and we were at this party and I'm like, well, you know, I have herpes. And he's like, yeah, well, condoms.
Oh, wow.
So just, I've been very lucky, I feel, that I've had a really positive experience. I haven't been rejected, per se. Sometimes it's very odd. I'm not sure if people fetishize it or feel like they can save me. I have a lot of people reach out that are, like, very, like, oh, you have herpes, like, try to take care of you kind of thing through Instagram. Like,
what
does that mean? What do you mean?
I feel like they want to save me or they feel like they'll have a better chance with me because I have herpes.
Oh, like, there not a lot of people are going to want you, but I do.
Yeah.
That is
wow. It's very weird. Yeah.
Can you see right through them though?
Oh yeah. I usually just block by.
Like that's like, this is my in, you know, but in a way it you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but that seems just like another iteration of stigma.
Yeah, it is.
It's
100%.
Reducing your personhood to this STI.
Yeah.
I'm sorry about that. After your herpes diagnosis, did you notice your sexual pattern shift? Were you more hesitant to be intimate with a new partner?
So I was hesitant even to be intimate with myself. So yes, very much so. There was a lot of issue of questioning my self-worth. You know, who am I now that I have this kind of thing? And the first question after I left the clinic when I was diagnosed, I fell into my dad's arms in the car and I'm like, who will love me? Like, who will love me? And that was the first thing that popped into my head. So I think that's a really profound statement of the impact, the stigma and the stereotypes. You know, when I looked in the mirror, I didn't see the girl that everyone says she looks like or whoever that is. I didn't resonate with any of that. And I know a lot of other people don't either. And, you know, even if you do have sex with multiple partners multiple times a day, that's great. But you can still get herpes.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever had a partner not be intimate with you because of you having herpes?
Not to my knowledge.
Wow, that's really great. Have you ever had protected sex with someone and not told them that you were positive?
No.
Who has the responsibility to tell somebody about that they have herpes? Is it all on the person who is carrying an STI?
A lot of people will ask me, you know, well, what if I just don't tell them? And I think that herpes, having herpes, brings up important sex conversations. You know, what's your testing history? I have this, you know, I want to make sure we're both protected. Have you been tested too? So I think that that's a really good way to offer an introduction to that conversation.
I got a DM recently from a girl saying she has a new college partner. She really likes him. They've been sleeping together for a few weeks and she has herpes and they've been using condoms. And so she feels like the time has passed where she can be open and tell him. And she's afraid if she tells him now, he'll be like, oh, you were lying.
Oh.
So what would you give any advice?
I mean, I think she should tell him, especially if she wants the relationship to move forward. But even if she doesn't, you know, condoms only protect so much. Maybe she presents it as that, you know, say, hey, I thought that condoms protected us, but I just found out that they don't.
Yeah. And also, you know, there is a lot of stigma and shame and I really liked you and I thought maybe you would reject me and I'm sorry about that. So yeah, I agree.
What does your current sex life look with your partner today?
We actually don't use condoms. Mm-hmm. So that faded away and that was his choice. So we are discordant.
And so how often does he get tested?
I actually don't know. I'll have to ask him.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But then if you ever have an outbreak, you would just not have sex during that period.
Correct.
Exactly how high is the risk of contracting herpes when you don't have an outbreak?
So it depends. So if you're asymptomatic, the virus can still be shedding and you wouldn't know it. Some people will feel tingles, but sometimes there's no symptoms at all. You're most contagious when you have an outbreak if you do present symptoms. So that's a time you want to either not have sex or take the proper precautions.
How did y'all come to the decision that he was going to stop using condoms?
That was a personal decision for him. We became monogamous and he just took it upon himself to not use condoms. And I said, are you okay with this? And he said, yep. I'm like, okay.
If it's consensual.
Yeah. What are some common misconceptions around herpes?
That you can get herpes from a toilet seat.
Oh, I've heard that one.
It's not true.
You can't get it from an inanimate object.
Nope. You cannot. Let's see. What's another one? That cold sores aren't herpes. It's the same virus, different strain. I've heard some bad ones. There was someone that asked me, she recently DM'd me and she said, my doctor said that I can't have sex for a year once I'm on antivirals.
What?
I know.
You're like, what doctor are you going to?
I said, excuse me? And she says, yeah. She says, it takes a year for the medicine to work. And I said, well, you know, everyone's body chemistry is differently, but you should be able to start having sex again. Should help you. Mm-hmm. So that was very unexpected. But again, the medical community.
Yeah, it feels a little bit behind.
So you do a lot of activist work today. You're very outspoken. You reached out to us to come on the show. And you're also getting a master's in sexual health studies, correct?
Yep, master of social work and master of human sexuality.
Did your diagnosis influence these decisions?
So yes and no. So I've wanted to be a sex therapist since 2011, 2012, but my focus then was more on how body image influenced female sexuality. So a lot of my personal life history events affect my academia. I guess that's my coping mechanism, you could say, and wanting to help that cause. So I did have an eating disorder when I was in high school. So I wanted to study, you know, how that affects the female's perception of herself. So when I got herpes, I had a plan to go to grad school and apply for grad school that fall, but that took a back seat. So once I started writing and really finding a niche and a home for myself in this writing, I said, you know, I really want to be a sex therapist, but I want to focus on helping individuals with STIs because I never had that person. And that's one reason that I didn't reach out to a mental health professional because I thought, you know, these people can't understand me. Like, how can anyone understand what I'm going through? Because at that time, I felt so alone and so detached from the world. And I'm like, if I go into this office, like, they're just going to ask me how I feel. And
I'm just going to compound the feeling. Yeah. Did you ever end up finding like a support group to talk to someone else who had herpes?
I guess my support group ended up being online through other activists. Like I mentioned, Ella Dawson, she doesn't do much herpes work anymore, but she did. And her work inspired me to start talking about it. And now I'm connected to many other herpes activists. And we actually just joined a group called HANDS. It's Herpes Activists Networking to Dismantle Stigma. So there's more of us. And I definitely think that the resources and discussions that need to be had are growing. And it's a safer environment than when I first found out that I had herpes. But I do still think there's a lot of work to be done.
In your experience and in your activism, have you noticed a difference in how men and women react to their diagnosis?
In the activist group, I feel like women want to help more, mm-hmm. want to help more on an individual level, and especially women helping women. The men, there are a few men. There's actually a great podcast. It's called Something Positive for Positive People mm-hmm. that was started by my friend Courtney. And he's a really powerful voice in the field. There's also another male who has done some work, but I'd say it's largely women.
What does an outbreak look like for someone with a penis versus someone with a vagina?
So someone with a vagina could have internal or external outbreaks. So for example, I had an internal outbreak like at the opening of my vagina, but you could also have them on your vulva. The penis could have them around the shaft, around the head. You could even get them on your inner thighs or your buttocks too.
Are they painful?
They can be, yes.
Mine and they were. Kind of look like blisters?
They're little blisters, yep.
What does it feel like?
It hurt really bad. It also caused me to be really, really tired because it affects your immune system. So it's either making its home at the base of your spine or your neck. But I felt so tired. I had like very little motivation. I felt sick, but I was mostly in pain. And at first, like I remember telling myself in my head, I'm like, oh, well, maybe it's just the underwear I wore. Like maybe my thong just rubbed me the wrong way before mm-hmm. I knew. Just like me having a conversation with myself. But you know, it just didn't feel right. And it just hurt. And like I said, when I got in the bathtub, it just stung.
Did you try any home remedies?
I did not. I did not want
to. You just knew right away, I need to go to the doctor.
Yeah. And I also, I think it's important to say that I had access to a doctor.
Yeah.
Like the CDC currently does not recommend testing for herpes. And herpes around the world, it dependent upon where you live, it's hard to get a herpes test. I've had some people say, you know, hey, I live here, my doctor won't test me.
Why would they recommend not testing?
Because of the psychological impact.
Oh, wow.
I don't agree with that. Personally, I think you have a right to know your sexual health. And I also think that it's...
Well, absolutely. If you're passing it around as well, or if it's getting contracted, you know?
So obviously you're not speaking for the CDC, but it's like, is the CDC suggesting that if everybody contracted herpes and then like contained their outbreaks, there wouldn't be as much stigma? Is that their thought process?
I don't know. I think part of it is because there's so many asymptomatic individuals. I think they're afraid because of the stigma. I think it's easier to say, just don't test so they don't find out.
But then not everybody has access to medication though. You know, like not everyone can regulate their outbreaks, perhaps as somebody who in
a
privileged country
could.
Yeah,
I don't know. That seems really crazy.
At CDC.
Again,
I want answers.
Again, yeah. I don't agree
with
this.
You're coming on the next podcast.
That's right. Up next, Joe from the CDC.
Yeah, but it's insane to me.
What's the biggest thing your diagnosis has taught you about yourself and about others?
Vulnerability. Mm. It has taught me to stand up for myself, stand by my beliefs, to be honest in my relationships. You know, if something doesn't feel right, not physically, but, you know, mentally and emotionally too, say something, speak up. There were some friendships that weren't really great for me.
Yeah.
And we started to drift different ways. And I'm like, you know what? This isn't serving me anymore. I honor you in the path that you're going, but I need to go this way.
And you feel like herpes kind of
it started
that push.
Mm-hmm. It allowed me to embrace myself and look at myself from a different viewpoint and say, this is who I am, this is who I want to be, and this is the person that I want to portray. And honesty was key to fulfilling that.
So you were saying that a lot of people message you because you mm-hmm. are so open about it online. What is the best message you've ever received?
Just that people read my writing and that it's helped them. They say, you know, I've scanned so many of your articles and I don't know where I'd be without you, you know, mm-hmm. or if I think I got one a couple weeks ago that was really impactful. And it said, if I had only read your story when I was 13, my life would be so different.
Wow.
That's really beautiful.
Do you have any advice for someone to be an ally to someone who's just diagnosed with herpes? So say hypothetically, your friend is diagnosed. Mm-hmm. What do you wish all of your friends knew?
About having herpes or about how to help me?
How to help you.
If I was in the situation, do things without alcohol or drugs. Mm. Have a sober environment because that's just what my coping mechanism was. And I don't think it was healthy. So do things that make you happy. Go explore. Get out of the house. Go do something.
What would you change about how herpes, you know, and STIs are taught in classrooms today or how our country treats them?
I wish that STIs weren't just, this is what it is. I found a lot of comfort in knowing the really deep biological basis of herpes, but that's not really taught in class. You know, I gave a presentation in my reproductive biology class, and one of my first slides is, you know, when you think STI or STD, what are the words that you hear? You know, slut, dirty, diseased, whore, sleeps around, doesn't have safe sex. So I like bringing what the stigmas and stereotypes are into conversations.
Up to the surface. Mm-hmm. And so when you say unpacking the biological aspect, can you walk us through that for herpes?
Sure. So I was really curious because I started, when I blogged, I'm like, is it STD or STI? And I started with STD. And then as I continued, I became more curious and I'm like, well, maybe I thought STI was more of a correct term politically. So I started looking at the biological basis, and that's how I found out that it was related to chickenpox and shingles and mono. It's a family called herpes viridae. Fun word. But I think it turns from a pathogen to an infection, and then it's a disease. But I didn't feel that my herpes diagnosis connotated a disease because, for example, HPV, it's the most commonly reported STI, I think.
Yeah, most commonly transmitted.
Yes. But that can manifest into a cancer, for example. Mm-hmm. But I feel like herpes
stops at a sore.
Right. And that might just be my interpretation, but for me, that's personally how I define it. So kind of taking that definition on for myself was really important.
Yeah, and taking the power away from it.
And this is kind of a big question, but what do you think are the cultural influences behind all these stigmas?
We see it in movies. I mean, I think it's funny. I have a thought. If you go into like a Target or a Walgreens and you look at the chapstick, you see it'll say cold sores, right? Mm-hmm. And people don't think herpes when they see that. I think it's just the part of the body that it's on. I think it's just a stigmatized, taboo part of the body. Even though we see it every day, even though we hear words in our music and our language every day, people talking about it and people being real about it is something that's seemingly unheard of.
Yeah, and I also think people aren't educated on the fact that you can control it and yet control not having symptoms and live like a completely normal sex life.
Yeah, and it plays into that. Our just cultural and historical trend of demonizing anything remotely sexual.
Mm-hmm.
And this sort of call and response, you see that in like, you know, during the HIV epidemic and how people were saying this
I'm
is,
like,
you know,
no one dies from herpes though. So I'm like, unless, correct me if I'm wrong.
No.
Yeah.
In Greek, herpes means to creep. I also think that's a fun fact.
Hmm.
Because it creeps, right? I guess it creeps.
I guess so. In and out.
What's one thing you wish someone would have told you when you were first diagnosed?
I wish I had a me. I wish I had a resource.
Fair. Someone just to talk to.
Yeah. I wish I had someone that could understand, like you said, just a resource to go to.
Is there a way to check? Like, let's say I go and have a really casual hookup. Like, can I physically look at their penis?
So you can't actually tell if someone has herpes just by looking at them. For example, my Snapchat asshole, perfectly fine penis. Nothing presented as atypical or infected or anything that would make you think he was a carrier of herpes.
Oh, wow.
Which is another reason that I think everyone should get tested.
But I feel like it always shows up on the blood test, herpes.
And the IgG blood test is the one that you want to get. But it will only show up if you've had it for more than 3 months, roughly.
Mm-hmm. IgG blood test. If you go and ask for a full panel test, then they'll test you for it.
Well,
or
herpes,
you have to specifically ask for
herpes test because it's not included on STI panels if you ask to be tested for everything.
Wow, that is very important. Can you say that again?
Herpes is not included on standard STI panels. So when you say that you would like to be tested for everything, you are most likely not being tested for herpes.
Wow.
Wow. And can they tell the difference in the test between if you have strain 1 and strain 2?
Some tests can that are typed, yes.
Okay, good to know.
How often today does herpes factor into your everyday thought process?
Mostly now it's academic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's like what you do for your career.
Yeah.
Or part of it.
And just like, you know, what can I write about? Or like, you know, the messages that I receive, like what's really going on in everyone's head that I can address or attempt to offer a perspective on. So it's more that sense. It's not really limiting.
Amazing.
What is the most ignorant thing anyone has ever said to you regarding herpes?
My immediate reaction is, you know, why are you such a slut?
Yeah.
But that's, again, a representation of the stigma.
What would you say to a young person who has just contracted it and is, like, feeling really lost and crazy? Some words of wisdom.
One, take a deep breath. Two, I feel like our world focuses a lot on trying to be positive. And even though I do believe there's a silver lining, I think you should allow yourself to feel. Like, if you feel like it fucking sucks and you want to cry, cry. Let it out. Cry into your pillow. Find that release and then start looking at how to move forward. But I really think it's important to acknowledge our emotions, and that really ties into the vulnerability piece too. Like, you're gonna have good and bad days. And my perspective is everyone has a story, and this is just now interwoven in yours.
For more content on how sexuality dictates our lives, you can visit us at www.killerandasweetthing.com and follow us on Instagram at birds.bees. You can follow Emily's journey on her website, emilydepass.com, and follow her on Instagram at ELD3393. This is Pillow Talk.